Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Squawker Talker podcast. The World Cup draw is freshly dropped tonight, and here on the Talker, we have the latest, hottest takes and reaction to the biggest show in town in Doha. The draw is only just finished less than an hour ago, so we are right on the spot to review the draw and preview the tournament to come later in 2022. 32 tournament places filled, with 29 confirmed nations all heading to Qatar, and the group stage draw is complete as we look at some instant predictions and the big talking points as the football world begins to dream. Now, as this is a reaction show on the Talker, we'll be dipping our toes into our social media feeds live to offer an insight and some fan tips and questions for the World Cup, as well as scrabbling around and scrolling through the changing picture of the draw itself. So let's get ourselves kicked off. My name's Fergal Brennan, and helping me trawl through Wikipedia, by which I mean offering some fantastic insights, as always, it is Squawker's chief football writer, Mohammed Butt. Mo, how's things?
I am hyped, mate. The World Cup is fantastic. And mate, Alfonso Davies just weeping like on my living room floor. Like, I can't believe it's the World Cup. I'm so flipping hyped. It's going to be great.
Mo has promised us some outrageous predictions. He's already given us some before we started recording. He's promised to try and remember as many of them as possible. They are genuinely eye-opening. I'm going to go with eye-opening. But I'm going to let you wait so you can hear them in full. Alongside Mo, we also have Football London correspondent Kaya Kainak. Relaxed after the draw, it's all over now. The balls have been pulled out, Kaya.
Yeah, I'm feeling good, mate. I've just been on the phone to Jermaine Genius's agent to try and get him to negotiate my fee for this podcast. So everything's looking up for me. I'm in a very good mood.
It's going to be a golden handshake for you, Kaya, at the end of the podcast. We can confirm that. We've just had the email through. Right, before we get started on the big talking points and some of the markets and predictions that we're going to be looking at, the main areas that we are talking about when we get into the meat of the podcast is predictions for winners of the 2022 World Cup, the furthest CAF nation, so the furthest African nation expected in the tournament, the race for the Golden Boot, the player of the tournament or the Golden Ball, and also the young player of the tournament. So we're going to get into that in just a sec. Before we start, though, I'm just going to run through the draw. Obviously, we are the latest reaction podcast to the draw being made, so you're probably still piecing the information together. So let's take it from the top. Group A, host Qatar, matched up with AFCON champion Senegal alongside Ecuador and a returning Netherlands. Group B, the big news for Gareth Southgate is a potential World Cup derby, as they could take on either Scotland or Wales if they edge past Ukraine, with the USA and Iran completing Group B. Group C, Lionel Messi's last salvo, we think, this winter is going to be with Argentina. They're up against Saudi Arabia, Mexico and Poland. Group D is holders France. They take on Denmark, Tunisia and then one of either Australia, the UAE or Peru. Flipping across the other side of the draw, Group E is the 2010 winners Spain up against the 2014 winners Germany plus Japan and either Costa Rica or New Zealand. Group F is the recently dethroned world number ones Belgium. They take on 2018 losing finalist Croatia alongside Canada and Morocco. Group G is the new kids on the block, or the old kids on the block, FIFA's new number one Brazil up against Serbia, Switzerland and Cameroon. And then to complete the draw, Group H, potential group of death, Portugal, Ghana, Uruguay and South Korea. Right, so that's all the housekeeping done in terms of who is in the draw. Before we look at the big markets for discussion, Mo, we just want to get your immediate reaction. A World Cup draw is massive. It's something that we look forward to, and the draw itself seems to go on for about 6 days before we finally get to the teams actually picking out. So What's your big takeaway? What's the big story for you from Doha this afternoon?
Group B is hype, man. Group B is just amazing. It's like you couldn't have handpicked a better draw. Like, you're England versus the USA, which is always hilarious. Twitter's going to be amazing on the days around that game. If you're not on Twitter right now, sign up for Twitter around the time of that game. It's going to be incredible. If you're taking a break, take a break. By all means, social media can be quite toxic. Come back for that game. It's going to be amazing. You know, and both of those teams versus Iran, I can smell the Islamophobia from here, man. It's going to be beautiful. Really, really some top-class bigotry I'm expecting. It's going to be fantastic. And then you got Ukraine in there. I mean, the emotional scenes, if Ukraine get there, can you imagine? I mean, it's going to be like the Yarmolenko applause is times 100. And then if Wales or Scotland get there, it's just absolute banter. If Wales get there, by the way, you know what? Actually, I'll save that for later. But if Wales get there, here we go. I've got a spicy take for you coming up. I'm just hyped for Group B. The rest of the World Cup, the rest of the draw is great, by the way, as well. We've got some really, really good stuff. One half of the draw, if Wikipedia's brackets are right, one half is immensely stacked. One half is just kind of stacked. Let's see. But so far, so good. World Cup draws are always great, man. The World Cup is fantastic. It's the best thing out
there. Kaya, there is some huge matchups right the way across the draw. And obviously, the seedings can benefit certain countries and really, really put some other countries in a bit of bother. What are you looking forward to most based on the back of the draw?
I think standout fixtures, probably Spain versus Germany is going to be an amazing game. And then you're looking beyond that, I guess France have got quite an interesting group. I think it'd be interesting to see how Denmark do. Obviously, a little bit of a rivalry sort of with Tunisia. So I'll be interested to see how they get on. But it's interesting. There's no real standout group of death, sort of what we, I guess, traditionally classify as a group of death. But that, for me, makes every group that bit more interesting, because I think every group is really competitive. There's no group where you're like, that team is probably going to be cast off and then these three teams are going to be battling it out. All the games are going to have something riding on it. So it makes for a really exciting World Cup group stage. I really like Mo was saying, I really like the look of this draw. I think it's really exciting and it's going to be a really good World Cup to watch.
Right, so we're not messing around. First prediction that we're going to look to go for, Mo, is the winner. So we're not starting on small measures. We're going right in. Before the draw and after the draw, Brazil are the standout favourites as it is. That's still the position at the point of recording. Tite's side marching through CONMEBOL qualification. Top of the group, unbeaten in 17 games in qualifying to get to Qatar. There's been some big changes from the side that played in Russia in 2018. Obviously, ultimately disappointed. They didn't really make the impact that they were anticipating to do. There's still a long time between now and when a first ball is kicked in Qatar this winter. But you look at Brazil, they're deservedly in a position of being favourites. Defending champions France are also super strong. They were unbeaten in qualifying again. They've got Karim Benzema back. They've got Kylian Mbappe, a little bit older, a little bit wiser and amazingly better. But then thrown into the pot, you've got probably a last tango for Messi and even for Cristiano Ronaldo with Portugal. There's lots of balls in the air spinning around. Who's your pick right here, right now, as a favourite to win it?
Spain. That's my pick. Because look, right, Spain should have won the Euros, but Mikel Oyarzabal missed two sitters against France. It's Italy, sorry, in the semis. And Spain would have dog-walked England in the final. Forget about it. Spain should have won the Nations League, but they only took one of their chances they had, and then Ferran Torres was injured in the final, and they got unlucky with the Mbappe offside, let's say, right? Much as Eric Garcia was Eric Garcia-ing. They're coming into this World Cup. Pedri is better, right? Gavi now exists as a phenomenon. Oh, Pedri's tired. Take him off. Oh, here's young Pedri, right? Busquets is playing better than he ever has, thanks to Xavi's return, right? You would actually assume Eric Garcia might be a usable player this time, as opposed to whatever he was last time. The right backs are solid. The left backs are playing better. Barcelona's resurgence has done wonders for Spain, basically, because it's meant that their Barcelona players, which Luis Enrique picks, are not useless. They're playing at the peak of their powers, probably. And then all the other players are coming into their own. Marco Asensio now is playing really well for Real Madrid. Mikel Oyarzabal is better. I still wouldn't rely on him. He's still a bit of a bottler, but he's still very good. Dani Olmo's coming through. You've got the Williams brothers. Young Nico Williams and Naki Williams is playing really, really well. You've got the Betis lads. Canales playing really well, coming through. You've got at right back, you've got Navas having a resurgence. Could he get a call up? I mean, you know, would you argue with that? He's playing really well. You've got Juan Jordan in midfield if you need some depth. Koke, of course, fantastic. But Pedri, and then, of course, the biggest hopeful is Ansu Fati. A fit Ansu Fati could make the world a difference. So Spain, for me, France, obviously, you have to take France very seriously. They are by far the best team in the world in terms of on paper. Phenomenal. Brazil as well. Look, Brazil are very, very hard to beat, but they're not very fun to watch. And if you watch the way they play, they funnel a little bit too much through Mr. N. I think you can shut them down. I think they can be handled. Argentina did it quite well in the Copa America final. And Argentina themselves, that's just a pure narrative pick. I was kind of torn on Argentina versus Spain, but it's got to be Spain for me. They've got everything, all this young, amazing team. They've got Luis Enrique, and they've got finally the forwards, and Ferran Torres, sorry, coming into great form. They've got the goal scorers they lacked at the last two tournaments that are going to push them over the edge, I think. Spain.
Mo is right. We did see Spain come back to the fore last summer in the Euros, getting all the way to the semi-finals. But you look at them in the real crunch of getting to finals. They haven't reached the final in a major tournament since they won Euro 2012. They are back in business. Luis Enrique is an extremely likeable manager, and he has reignited Spain and bringing through these incredible talents, primarily through Barcelona. But if we look at this kind of from a narrative point of view, and particularly on social media, we put a shout out early this morning for World Cup draw predictions from our social media followers, and there's huge attention on a Ronaldo-Messi matchup at whatever point in the tournament is going to happen. But there's a lot of people that think if there's any faith in narrative in football, the two of them will go toe-to-toe in the final. Do you think that's a possibility? Would either of them be your pick to go on and win it?
Not for me. I'd be surprised if they both made it to the final, maybe one. Of the two, I'd say Portugal have the stronger chance just because of the team they have behind Ronaldo. There's an interesting debate going on in Portugal is whether they're better off with Ronaldo or without Ronaldo. It's a similar debate to what Man United are having this season. Because if you look at the strength and depth of that Portuguese side, right back is strong, left back is strong. Centre back, they have a good first two in Diaz and Pepe. Beyond that, maybe a little bit questionable. Midfield, very good. Wingers, unbelievable. Forwards, crazy. So I would say of the two, they're more likely. Argentina do look like a bit more of a team now, a bit more of a unit. They've obviously got a good goalkeeper, which they've been lacking in previous tournaments. They are the Copa America champions, so you can't entirely rule them out. But we've seen with Italy that continental championships don't mean an awful lot when it comes to the World Cup. So I don't know. I'd be very surprised if either of them got to the final of the World Cup just because of the strength of the other teams that are around. But if it's one of the two, then for me it's Portugal who I'd back to go the furthest. And yeah, CR7.
I find Portugal for me interesting, right? Because it's like, I think the next tournament, when they finally move on from Ronaldo, this team is frightening. Mm-hmm. Frightening, but right now, because how do you cut a guy who scores over 100 whatever goals? A guy, you can't cut him, right? So you have to play him, but he's detrimental to the way the entire rest of that team. None of their other best players have chemistry with him, really. So it's like you have to play him because he's him. But when he moves on, that team is frightening. So I would say look at Portugal for the Euros, maybe the next World Cup. That team is terrifying. But Portugal are very interesting. Argentina, look, it's just because it's that thing where for years they came close, like they went three finals in a row, didn't they, under Messi, with Messi, and they made the Copa America, the World Cup. And it was like, if they had a monkey on their back, they bottled it, right? Basically bottled it in all three of those finals. Higuain in particular, I'll never forgive you, Gonzalo, bottled it in all three of those finals. But they've won one now. So that thing is lifted off their shoulders. Is that going to liberate them? I mean, this is the thing, is I still think their team is still a bit too weak. I'd love it to happen. It would be hilarious and great fun as well, because, I mean, who doesn't love Emi Martinez? Messi, of course, the emotional scenes. But I just wonder if they will be found short in quality. I think they'll probably give a better showing than they have in any World Cup recently, even 2014 when they got the final. I think they'll do really well, but I think ultimately they'll be found out by a better team, Spain, basically.
Right, we're going to move on to the next little subject that we are talking about, which is the furthest African nation to go in the World Cup 2022. Obviously, we've talked about the winner. Mo's given his tip for Spain to go all the way in and clinch it. But in terms of continental power, there's so much focus, Mo, on UEFA and CONMEBOL because they are the dominant nations when it comes to the real guts of the tournament, going on into the knockout stages, quarters, semis, final, and then obviously going on to win it. So looking at the records of African nations at the World Cup, there's never been an African nation that's gone further than the quarterfinal. Cameroon in 1990, Ghana in 2010, and then Senegal in 2002. But I believe we're looking at a different situation with the African sides going into the tournament in Qatar in 2022. And looking at the picture for the African sides that have qualified, you've got Senegal, who are defending AFCON champions in Group A, Qatar, Ecuador and the Netherlands. Then you flick across right through the rest of the group. Tunisia are in with France and one of the intercontinental playoff winners, and Denmark. Looking across the rest of it, Morocco, difficult one with them, with Belgium, Croatia and Canada. Cameroon in with Switzerland, Serbia and Brazil. And then Ghana have got Portugal, Uruguay, who we know Ghana have a bit of history with, and South Korea. So the situation can open up positively for one, maybe two of them. Do you think we're going to see the quarterfinal hex broken in Qatar?
Maybe. Like, that's such a horrible answer, isn't it? But look, here's the thing. Ghana are in...
That's what we pay you the big bucks for. The half answers. It's like the half spaces. Star men in the half spaces. We want you with the half answers.
Listen. Here's the thing, right? Here's the issue. With Ghana are in a tricky situation, because if they don't win their group, which I think they might struggle to, they're going to face Brazil in the round of 16, right? That's never a good place to be in. If they win their group, they get the runner-up from Group G, but then they're going to be probably end up facing France, right? So they're going to be in a bit of problems, right? Senegal, and this is obviously a cliche answer, but Senegal definitely has the potential to make the semis. It's not going to be easy. They have to win their group, first of all. If they win their group, I think they get into the quarterfinals for sure, right? I think they'll be the runner-up of Group B, so I think that's Iran, USA, or someone else. So I think they can win. They can win that game, right? They can definitely do that. Then they play the probably likely to be Argentina in the quarterfinals. Can they beat Argentina? Frankly, yes. I think they can. Senegal are an amazing side. If you look at them, all they're lacking is a goal scorer. If they had, like, if they throw back to the old days of Senegal, if they had Demba Ba or Papi Cisse in that form that they used to be in, they would be, honestly, they'd be dark horses to win the whole thing because their goalkeeper is world class. One of their centre back, their best centre back is world class. They've got an amazing midfield full of really impressive players. They're a fantastic side. And they've got Mane up front, who's world class. Mane's not a number nine, though, and he's more of a creator for Senegal when you watch him play. And so that's the problem. He's like passing. He needs to be able to pass to himself. You know what I mean? And he can't. And that's the problem. It was a problem in the AFCON final. It was a problem in the Europe qualifiers. Now, they won those games anyway on penalties and stuff. But if they'd had a striker, if Mane had been a pass to himself, they would have won the games in normal time. All three of them. Like, easily as well. And so that's the issue for Senegal is can one of their strikers catch form at the right time? If they can, yeah, I'd say they'll make the semifinals. I honestly think they'll make the semifinals. They'll beat Argentina. If they don't, they'll probably lose at the quarterfinal stage again, unfortunately. That's the sad truth of it all.
Kai, when you look at the picture for the teams that have qualified, the African nations that will be representing at Qatar in 2022, Senegal are the standout ones because obviously they're defending AFCON winners. Sadio Mane's played a crucial role for them over the last couple of weeks and months. But there is opportunities in some of the other groups because Group G, for example, with Brazil. Brazil are standout favourites to go on and win that group. But Serbia and Switzerland, Cameroon will look at that and think there's an opportunity for us here. Whereas Ghana in Group H, Portugal, Uruguay are a really good team. South Korea are quite tricky. They were good in qualifying. There's options for some teams, but unfortunately you look at others and go, this is probably too much for you. I'm looking at you, Morocco, Croatia and Belgium, particularly if they've got all of their guns firing, that's probably going to be a bit too difficult for them.
Yeah, I was going to mention Cameroon, I think, as the sort of second standout African nation at this tournament. They've been dealt a favourable-ish hand with Serbia and Switzerland. Obviously, Brazil is a difficult entity. They played them in 2014. Alex Song, I think, was that the Croatia game he got himself sent off in for elbowing someone? It might have been the Brazil game, I'm not sure, but that was a strange tournament for them. They've bounced back. They hosted the AFCON. They played pretty well. Unlucky not to get to the final. They qualified dramatically, beat Algeria, who I think many people would have fancied as sort of a team who could go far in the mold that we're talking about Senegal, but Cameroon are here instead. So they deserve credit for that. You're looking at their squad. Carl Toko Ekambi is obviously a fantastic player up front. Onana's a very good goalkeeper. Strength and depth might be a bit of an issue when you're playing against the likes of Serbia and Switzerland, but we'll see. I might disagree with you slightly on Morocco, though. I think Canada and Croatia, two teams, they might fancy themselves to get a decent result against. Obviously, they will find it difficult, but I'm not fully convinced by this Croatia team in a way that, obviously, they were finalists at the last World Cup, but I think a lot of those players have aged now. A lot of that golden generation is sort of at the latter end, and there's not quite the same generation of players backing them up. Canada is a bit of an unknown quantity. They've sort of got two very good players in Jonathan David and Alphonso Davies. But beyond that, we don't really know too much about them. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I would say Cameroon probably the second best chance. I don't think if they do progress through the group, they will be probably knocked out by one of Portugal or Uruguay. But beyond that, I'd say keep an eye on Morocco. Don't sleep on them.
The thing with Cameroon, though, you have to remember is their players would be terrified because the head of their FA is Samuel Letu and their coach is Rigobert Song. Would you ever dare disappoint either of those men? I would be terrified to disappoint either of those men.
Yeah.
That's why they beat Algeria. They were like, we can't lose, man. We've got to go back to Rigobert Song. He'll kill us. Go, quick. So, you know what I mean? Like, you wouldn't dare disappoint Rigobert Song on a good day, man. Forget about it. So you're right. Keep an eye on Cameroon. Don't write them off.
I'm going to agree with Mo on Senegal, but I do look at the picture that they could potentially be up against Argentina in a knockout game. But my big thing in all of this goes back to Sadio Mane. Sadio Mane has scored the two biggest goals in the history of the Senegal national team in the last 6 weeks in the most pressurised scenario, back-to-back, when he stood up against his pal from Liverpool, Mo Salah, and he's done it twice. The absolute stones on this fella to stand there and take those penalties and lead Senegal over the line to their first AFCON and then over the line to get into the World Cup. That's huge. And when you
put it on a play for Ismaïla Sarr as well against Egypt twice, yeah. Sarr should have buried them in normal time. Should never have gone to penalties.
But he didn't. That's the difference in these situations. And it's not necessarily who's a better player, Salah or Mane, but in this scenario, when Senegal really needed their guy to stand up and do it, he did. And I look at their group and I fully agree with Mo. I think they're going to go on and win it. It is just that issue of Argentina in the knockout stages. But unfortunately, and it brings me great pain to say this, I think it's going to be another frustrating World Cup for Lionel, and it's probably going to be his last, because I just don't think right the way across their squad they've got enough to really land a punch in the further stages. But that's just my call. That's my two pence on Mane. I can't wait to see Mane at the World Cup. Right, we're going to move on to the race for the Golden Boot. Obviously, Mo, there's huge attention on this at any World Cup, but the key, as Miroslav Klose will tell you, fill your boots in the group stages. That's the big one. And we've actually seen a drop-off in the amount of goals that get scored to win you the Golden Boot. Ronaldo in Japan, South Korea in 2002 was the last player to win the Golden Boot, scoring more than six goals since 1974. So that shows how the average has dropped off. And generally speaking, this idea of filling up in the group stages has worked. Harry Kane in Russia 2018 got five in the group stages and just one in the knockouts. And then James Rodriguez in 2014, three and six. So it was a little bit of a balancing act in terms of making sure that you're still a force in the knockout stages. But generally speaking, we know who's probably going to win the Golden Boot after the group stages and definitely after the last 16.
Yeah, likely. I mean, this is where, for me, this is why there are three main candidates for me to win the Golden Boot, right? The first one is Robert Lewandowski, right? Lewandowski versus Messi, by the way, and that's going to be beautiful. For the first time in history, Messi actually has the better team than Lewandowski when they meet each other. But that's going to be fun. That's going to be a great matchup. Lewandowski, for me, because he's really good at scoring goals. That's such a stupid thing to say, isn't it? But do you know what I mean? Like, he's just phenomenal at scoring goals. Mexico said he'll do what Klose did. He'll score like four against Saudi Arabia. And he's exactly the kind of guy that would do that. Messi's a playmaker. He'll be passing out. He won't be doing that. Lewandowski can score four or five against Saudi Arabia by themselves. And then Mexico is probably going to score against Argentina as well. He could end the group stages with like five or six, six or seven, maybe even. Honestly, I'm not joking. It's like, so yeah, based on that. But for me, the two main shouts, and my two favorite shouts to win the Golden Boot are Kylian Mbappe is one, right? Because he's obviously just outrageously good and brilliant and probably one of the best strikers in the world right now. Just outrageous. He's phenomenal and he's going to be even better. And yeah, so for me, and look, I mean, who's France's group? It's going to be Peru, probably Denmark and Tunisia. Like, that's not, none of those are going to stop Mbappe that much. And then in the knockout rounds as well, that same thing. I think France are going to go all the way to the final. I think they'll be fine. So I think Mbappe's in it. But my outside shout for it, and this is a hot take, is Gareth Bale. If Wales make the World Cup, if Wales qualify for the World Cup, Gareth Bale is going to go nuclear on Group B. I'm telling you right now, he's going to score in every game. He's going to bury England with a hat-trick. Wales will win the group. If Wales qualify, they have to qualify first, right? If they could not qualify. He doesn't go nuclear until they qualify. But if they do, I'm telling you, Gareth Bale in a Wales shirt is superhuman. He's ridiculous. He's going to go absolutely mad, and he will fire Wales to win that group, and then they'll that's where the Senegal prediction comes up, because then they'll probably if Wales qualify, Bale is going to win the Golden Boot. If Wales don't qualify, it will be Mbappe or Lewandowski. If Wales qualify, bet on Bale. He's Superman. The man's using Real Madrid as a training camp.
As a gym. He's basically just using it as a free gym membership.
You can't mess with this mentality. This man moved back to Spurs. The fans are like, we love you, Gary. He's like, yeah, I'm just here to get ready for the Euros. He's incredible. Watch him. He'll move to Qatar in the summer. His contract runs out in the summer of 2022. He'll move to a Qatari club. He'll move to a Qatari club just to chill there, get acclimatized to playing in Qatar. You watch, man. If Wales qualify, Bale. Otherwise, Mbappe or Lewandowski.
Okay, Kaya, there's obviously going to be two schools of thought on this. Harry Kane won it in 2018, and the established names, the likes of Lewandowski, Kylian Mbappe, obviously, who's incredible in the Euros last summer as well. But this has been one that's caught loads of interest on our social media feed since we popped up that tweet about giving some World Cup draw shouts. And one of the names, alongside Messi and Ronaldo and the narrative surrounding that, one of the names that has flashed up as an outside shout, so I wanted to throw this in with your prediction for Golden Boot winner, is Dusan Vlahovic. Obviously, moving to Juventus, he's the top scorer in Serie A so far this season. Serbia find themselves in with Brazil, Switzerland and Cameroon. We know, again, fill your boots in the group stages is key if you want to go and win the Golden Boot. Could he be an option, or who's your pick for potential Golden Boot winner?
He could be an option. I'm looking at the fixtures that obviously Vlahovic has got, and Brazil, are you backing to score many in that? Personally, I'm not. And then you go to Switzerland. Switzerland don't really concede many goals. That'd be tricky. Cameroon, I've just backed them, so it'd be a bit silly for me to then say that he's going to go score a load of goals against Cameroon. So for me, it would be no. Vlahovic is an outside shot for the Golden Boot. I see why he's sort of been mentioned. I think that's fair enough. His record with Serbia, from what I can remember, is not the best at the minute, but I think it will probably get better as he becomes more acclimatized with his teammates. Serbia are a very top-heavy team. They've obviously got Jovic and Mitrovic as well, so I don't quite know how they're gonna line up come December. I was going to say come the summer, because that's just my autopilot, yeah. But of course it's December, which is weird, yeah. But we'll get used to saying that over the next few months. But no, for me, my bet is probably, and it's boring and it's obvious, but it's Harry Kane, just because I look at those group fixtures that England have got now, and I don't think Iran are a bad team. I don't think USA are a bad team. And I don't think any of Scotland, Wales or Ukraine are necessarily bad teams. But I think Harry Kane would back his chances of scoring in all three of those group games and maybe scoring a few. We've got five, obviously, in the group stages in Russia. I think he'd be targeting something similar if possible. Again, if he gets a few penalties, as many as he did in Russia, then, of course, that'd be even better. So we'll see. He'd be my bet. Just looking at the way the groups have gone, I might have said Romelu Lukaku as well, just because of the group that Belgium have got, but he's not been in the best of form for Chelsea, and who knows where he will be next season and how that will all work out. So tricky. But yeah, probably Harry Kane of the main strikers for me.
My call is slightly boring as well, but more exciting as an individual than Harry Kane. It's Kylian Mbappe. Again, I think the group stages to fill your boots. Obviously, the intercontinental playoff position is still to be decided, but Denmark are a really good team. I enjoyed watching them at the Euros, but I think just the pace and the attitude and the mentality of Kylian Mbappe now, he loves the big stage. He loves being the main man. I'd be fully expecting him not to be at PSG by the start of next season, which means he'll be at a new club for the World Cup, and he'll just have confidence flooding through him. Tunisia, you'd expect him to get a couple of goals, and I do think France will go deep in this competition. So I'm going for Kylian Mbappe as my call, because I just think he's going to be on fire. Right, we're going to move on to the last couple of picks. Player of the tournament and young player of the tournament, Mo. Player of the tournament follows a similar pattern to the Golden Boot in that the winner of, or someone that wins the World Cup, generally doesn't win the Golden Boot or the player of the tournament. Maybe it's a little bit of a sympathy vote. Romario was the last one to do it when Brazil won it in 1994. And looking at some of the names from the last three World Cups that have won it, Luka Modric, obviously Croatia losing in the 2018 final, Lionel Messi after Argentina lost in the 2014 final, and then Diego Forlan after Uruguay got put out in the semis. So if we're looking for a pattern of who's going to win this, we can almost Excel spreadsheet it and go, who do we think is going to get to the last four, maybe the final? Who's their best player? They're going to be player of the tournament.
Yes, but before we get to that, I need to address the fact that it was 2002, 2010, 2014, absolute robberies. Ronaldo, Xavi and Manuel Neuer should have won those player of the tournaments. I mean, Messi was great, but Manuel Neuer in 2014 was out of this world. Xavi is the greatest anything ever in 2010 World Cup. And then Ronaldo, come on, how did you not give Ronaldo a player tournament for that World Cup? Anyway, moving on from that, Kylian Mbappe. It's a boring choice. It's a very boring choice, but it's going to be Kylian Mbappe because, like I said, France are going to make the final, I think. They can lose in the final, and Kylian Mbappe is going to be out of this world. And here's the other thing you have to remember. Real Madrid tend to buy whoever wins player of the tournament or whoever does really, really well at the World Cup, that really shines at the World Cup. They did it with Mesut Ozil 2010. They couldn't buy any of the Spain players because they were all either playing for Real Madrid or they played for Barcelona, or there was Joan Capdevila, who they didn't want to buy anyway. Or, 2014, James Rodriguez. They didn't need to buy James Rodriguez. Why would you buy James? They bought him anyway. Just like, we can buy him. Let's buy him. You know, he completely ruined their plans. And then 2018, it was Luka Modric, who was already a Real Madrid player. So, and going further back, 2006, Cannavaro, they bought him. 2002, Ronaldo, they bought him. They always buy the player of the tournament, right? This is a mid-season World Cup. It's not a summer World Cup. So they can't, oh, look, let's buy him. But it doesn't matter because, like 2018, it's going to be a Real Madrid player. It's going to be Kylian Mbappe. He's going to move there in the summer, 99.9% likely. And he's going to sort of reverse engineer the destiny of the Golden Ball of the World Cup, in that he's going to already move to Real Madrid, and then he's going to win the Golden Ball of the World Cup. He's the best. He's phenomenal. Outside shout for Benzema, who was actually really good at the Euros, the only France player that was. But Mbappe, I think, is just going to absolutely shred everything, like goals, assists. He's phenomenal right now. If you look at him for PSG, and that's been PSG, who are not like an anti-team. And backed up by this new 3-5-2 that Deschamps is playing, he'll probably get to play very centrally, still be backed by Wirth. Pogba's going to play. Pogba's an outside shot as well. Basically, anyone on France, Pogba, Benzema, Griezmann, Mbappe, it could be any of them. I think it's going to be Mbappe, but it could be any of those major France players, honestly. I think France are going to finish runners-up in the World Cup. And like you said, Golden Ball tends to come from the runner-up.
Following that line of logic, Kaya, and we're still trying to piece this big World Cup jigsaw together, it generally is a semi-finalist or a losing finalist. Whether it's a sympathy vote or not, we don't know. That's not for us to decide. That's for FIFA to decide. But generally, that pattern is followed. And Mo, as you brilliantly pointed out, there's always a Real Madrid connection, whether you're already there or they've already got you in their sights. So there's lots of links that would maybe throw it towards Kylian Mbappe, but then that's throwing into doubt that France will go on and win the tournament. So, given the fact is you have to go to at least the quarters, probably the semis, to be in with a shout. So that breaks the draw in half. We already know that that's 2/3 of the teams out of the running. Who's your call to go on and win it?
Yeah, my tip for Qatar's best player, Akram Afif, has just been taken out there by you saying that, having to get to the quarterfinals or semis. But I'm going to say, it's tough to look beyond Mbappe, because he most kind of stolen my thunder, because he's definitely, for me, he's a shoo-in to win the Golden Ball. Like he's going to be the best player at the tournament for me. But if I'm looking at players who...
I'll change my prediction to Pogba. You can have Mbappe.
I'll take Mbappe as my main one.
Pogba's going to be at Real Madrid as well. So I'll say Pogba too.
I'll take Mbappe as my main one. But as given that, I'll try and do something different. And again, maybe slightly boring, but Brazil probably going to go pretty far in this tournament. So you're looking at Brazil. Who's Brazil's star man? Who do they play through entirely? It's Neymar. So I personally think he's having a pretty poor season with PSG, but maybe he's doing a Gareth Bale and saving himself for the winter. So we'll see. We'll see. I don't know. I would back Mbappe, but I think Neymar's got it in him. If he doesn't sort of crumble under the pressure, which is what he has done for PSG and what he's, you know, what Brazil have done in the past, I think he can probably sort of find a way to bring that Golden Ball home, if not the trophy itself.
My tip is another French player, and it's not the glitz and glamour of a Paul Pogba or a Kylian Mbappe. It is the man himself, N'Golo Kanté, because I think France are not going to win it, but I think they're going to go right into the heart of the tournament. And N'Golo Kanté is absolutely central to everything that is good about France. Didier Deschamps bets his life on him for France when it comes to picking his team. He's huge for them. He is beginning to get the recognition of what an incredible footballer he is. And I just think if France do want to punch into the knockout stages in this competition, Mbappe's goals will be huge, but N'Golo Kanté running the midfield will be absolutely massive. So a little bit of a wild card shout, because N'Golo Kanté is not interested in headlines, but he's my pick for player of the tournament.
Kanté is lovely, but you have to remember Kanté, he's got a lot of injury problems lately, and Aurélien Tchouaméni showed in the last cup against France he can play that role. Not as good as Kanté, no one does what Kanté does, no one in the world, but that's my only thing about Kanté, is injuries are a thing with him. He's really picking up a lot more lately. I love him, though. He's a wonderful man. I'd be happy if he won it. Who wouldn't be? Who could ever be angry at Kanté winning anything? He's wonderful.
I don't think anyone's ever been angry at Kanté for anything. I think it's pretty much impossible. But you have actually led us on to our final category, Mo, and they're bringing up Tchouaméni, because he's going to be involved in this, and that's the young player of the tournament that we're expecting in Qatar 2022. And before we get started, I just want to read the list in the Premier League era of players that have won this, Mo, because it is a mixed bag of success in terms of the careers that these players have gone on to have. So USA 1994... Marc Overmars, France 1998, Michael Owen, Japan South Korea 2002, Landon Donovan, Germany 2006, Lukas Podolski, South Korea 2010, Thomas Muller, Brazil 2014, Paul Pogba, and then Russia 2018, Kylian Mbappe. So based on the last four tournaments, it's been a European, either a German or a French player that's won it. We've had Landon Donovan thrown in there, we've had Michael Owen thrown in there, and Marc Overmars way back when in USA 94. So if we're looking for a pattern, it's more than likely going to be a European player. Again, someone that goes deep in the knockout stages of the tournament. Who are you going for?
Okay. Anyone that watched our podcast during the Euros already knew my answer to this before it was even asked. It's Pedri, baby. It's Pedri. The Pedri fan club is here. I'm going to do the same thing in the World Cup podcast, but I'm just going Pedri with the background of every pod. Look, come on. What kind of question is this? Pedri is the most obscene talent I've ever seen at 19 years old. He plays like he's 28. He's ridiculous. He's like young players like Gavi and Tchouaméni. They play really well, but you're like, okay, I can see that you're a young player. I can see that you're young and you've still got some rough edges and you play with a bit of impetuousness that youth has and you're brilliant. You're fantastic. You're well, going to be world-class hopefully one day, but I can see that you're a young player. Pedri, you look at him, you're like, what the hell is this guy? Is he 30? Well, yeah, you watch him. He plays with the serenity and composure of an elderly player. He doesn't make youthful mistakes. Mistakes he makes are the kind of mistakes that 30-year-olds make. Just like, oh, you made a bad pass. Oh, you did. He's just so ridiculously good. He's so ridiculously good. He controls the ball fantastically, dribbles wonderfully, passes. He even scores goals now. Do you see what he did to Galatasaray? Oh, my days. This guy is unreal. He's like Xavi. He's like a sort of perfect middle between Xavi and Iniesta. He's ridiculous. And now he's being coached by Xavi. And he's going to be coached by Luis Enrique. Like two fantastic midfield players who give you both two different kinds of football. So with Xavi, you get the tactics, you get the positioning, you get the skill, the control technique. With Luis Enrique, you learn how to fight people, man. And Luis Enrique is a fighter, and that's going to give that to Pedri as well. And Luis Enrique knows how important Pedri is, put him right at the heart of his team. Pedri was young player of the tournament of the Euros, I think. He's currently the golden ball, was the best player of the tournament of the Euros, but obviously you give him young player because he's the young guy. Just outrageous, phenomenal. He's going to do it at the World Cup again. He'll be outrageous. He's going to be key to Spain winning the tournament. Their midfield flows through him. I mean, I would argue he's probably on the first team sheet before Busquets now. I think it's Pedri, and then it's Busquets or Rodri, because you can rotate those two. And then you've got Koke, you've got Gabi, you've got a whole bunch of guys you can plug into that third spot. Mikel Merino playing very well, Sergio Canales. You know, Spain have got a lot of talent. But Pedri, man, Pedri. It's going to be Pedri all the way, every day, all day, every day. Number 10 as well now. Goodness me, Pedri.
Throw it over to you, Kaya. I'm just checking here. I think, based on what I've been reading here in terms of the award, because it's only been given for two European championships, France 2016, Renato Sanchez won it, and then, as Mo said, Pedri won it in Euro 2020 last summer. So he'll be the first player to ever do the double if he wins the young player in the Euros last summer and then wins the young player in Qatar this winter, because he is incredible. For club and for country, he is absolutely central. Mo's obviously given his shout that Spain are going to go all the way and win it. But this is arguably more exciting than the player of the tournament, because everybody wants to see the next emerging talent coming through. And let's be honest, we all want to be the ones to say, I told you so. So I'm going to give you the chance here to say, I told you so. Who is going to be the young player? Who's your tip?
Pedri is incredible, but so is Jude Bellingham. And I think he's someone to really watch this tournament, because obviously, everyone knows who Jude Bellingham is, but I think because this is a kind of an English arrogance thing, but because he doesn't play in the Premier League, a lot of people haven't quite understood just how good a player he is. And there are questions as to whether he should even be in the starting 11 for England come the World Cup. Of course he should. He's, I think, England's best midfielder already, central midfielder, and he is aged 18. It's ridiculous. I think he is going to play. I think he should be starting every single game. Obviously, don't know if he's going to move this summer. I'd be surprised if he did, because Haaland's going to leave Dortmund. I'd be surprised if they sold both in the summer. But yeah, I think Jude Bellingham is going to be really important for England. From now until November, December, he's going to be huge. And I think he's only going to grow in stature. And he doesn't look to be fazed by any of it. I mean, He played in the Ivory Coast friendly. I watched that game and I was really, really impressed by him. I've been really impressed by him whenever I've seen him in the Champions League, whenever I've seen the Bundesliga. Nothing seems to faze him. Even in the Europa League, that game against Rangers, he was probably Borussia Dortmund's standout player. So he, for me, is the guy to watch. He's not someone no one's heard of. And I'd love to sort of whip out a player that no one had ever heard of. Then I could really say I told you so. But for me, it's Jude Bellingham. I think he's definitely going to be in the squad for England. I think he should be starting for England. And if he does start, I'd back him to be young player of the tournament.
Quite a shout for Vinny Jr. Mm. Vinny Jr. is going to be... Vinny's playing really well for Brazil, for Real Madrid, sorry. If he can get that same sort of thing going for Brazil, keep an eye on him, because Brazil, I think, will do well as well in the tournament. Outside shout, Jonathan David would be nice for Canada. He's really good, but maybe don't know if Canada are going to go that far. Otherwise, I mean, who are you looking at, really? You know, Bellingham is a great shout. Foden is another great shout for England. But the thing with those two is you've got to look at, is Southgate going to start them? Mm. That's the only issue. with both of those guys, because they both could do it. I think they're both brilliant. But Southgate, obviously, he loves his Rice and Phillips. He loves those two in there. And then it's, so then where would you put him? Is he going to take Mount's place up front? I mean, he should do. He's better than Mason Mount. With all due respect to Mason Mount, I like Mason Mount a lot. Please don't get on my back, Chelsea fans. But he's better than Mason Mount. But it's just, is Southgate loves what Mount brings, right? Set pieces, defending, all that stuff. Is he going to do that? I mean, I don't know. You know, and then you're looking at, you know, so that's just the issue with Sterling. And same thing with Foden. They're both in that same sort of boat because they're competing with Grealish, who is already established now. Sterling, who is obviously Gareth Southgate's favourite person. And, you know, Big HK, who's going nowhere. Southgate's other favourite person. That's the only problem with those two. Keep an eye on Vinny Jr. He might just surprise. Rafinha's not young. Never mind, no. Keep an eye on Vinny Jr. And Anthony, if Brazil will take him, you never know. Brazil have got some good players, man. Good young players. But yeah, Pedri.
Before we wrap up, Kai, I'm going to ask you this, because if I asked Mo this, it would be another podcast in itself. I've got to ask you about England. Obviously, we've touched on Jude Bellingham and whether Southgate will play him, whether he'll be an important part. England all the way to the final in Euro 2020, missing out, losing on penalties. And the predictions and the plotting of Pats is already starting based on the group stage draw. So, roughly speaking, if England get through as either top or second, that'll have a huge bearing on the direction that they will go in. Because if they finish runners-up in Group B, they'll be in the first half of the draw. Relatively straightforward, they'll face the winners of Group A, which likelihood is probably either the Netherlands or Senegal, based on the predictions that we've been throwing around so far. That would lead them, again, to possibly facing Argentina in the last 16. If they go on the other side of the draw and they win Group B, then similar situation against the second place in Group A, but it's likely to be France that are waiting down the line for them in the last eight. So either way, the likely plotting is probably Argentina or probably France, and that's Lionel Messi going full pelt for his first ever World Cup in his last World Cup, or Kylian Mbappe.
Yeah, I think as much as Mo would like to tip Gareth Bale to be the Golden Boot winner, I think England aren't going to come second in their group. I think that's, with all due respect to the other teams in there, I think that's too easy a group for them to come second. And I think if England were to come second in that group, unlike in 2018, when it wasn't a really massive catastrophe that they came second, because obviously Belgium were in the group, and Belgium, in my opinion, were one of the best teams in there, obviously got to the final. It's different because you can't suddenly come second in that group and then just switch it on for the knockout stages. It doesn't work like that. Momentum's a massive thing in tournaments. So all these sort of banal conversations that we can expect to have is, should England try and bomb the group stages? Should they try and come second? All that kind of stuff. No, I think they have to try and win the group. They have to try and go as far as they can. But having said that, coming up against France in the quarterfinals, I don't see England getting beyond that. I think they have weaknesses that I think France will be able to exploit, and I don't think England would necessarily be able to exploit the weaknesses that France have as effectively. So it's a shame, because if you'd asked me before the draw, which feels like a lifetime ago because of how long all the ceremony was, but if you'd asked me before the draw, I'd have said England semi-final, final, sure. But right now, I find it hard to see them getting beyond the quarterfinals, which is a real shame because this team is so good. But I think, obviously, it's a young team and they'll be even better for Euro 2024 and World Cup 2026. So not the end of the world, but it's frustrating because I think this England team has the potential to go a lot further. But I think sort of the cruelty of the draw means that quarterfinals is where they will end up, unfortunately. Yeah.
Semis are possible if they run up in the group, because they could beat Argentina. But the thing is, the semifinals would stop there because it'd be Spain or Brazil, and England aren't beating Spain or Brazil. So yeah, semi-finals maximum. I think I agree with Kai. I think quarter-finals possible. Although a friend of mine did make a prediction after the World Cup that after England finished fourth, they keep getting better. Finished fourth in the last World Cup. They finished third in the Nations League. They finished second in the Euros. So she says England are going to win it now, because it's like the progression. You can't argue with it, can you, right? It's pretty solid. Let's see what happens. But if you hear it here first, he was right. Crystal was right.
That's some creative maths to be working on. I'm going to go for quarters. I'm going to go for England winning the group and then France in the quarters, and that's going to be the end. But as Kai said, England fans will be listening to this or looking ahead to the World Cup, and it is a young team. They were the youngest team at Euro 2020 based on average age. So the future is bright, but when you come up against world-class talents, things are difficult. There's loads to look forward to in the next few weeks and months to come as you build up to Qatar. The thing that I'm looking forward to the most is Mo training Gareth Bale as he's bombing it around Cardiff Castle. muscle, keeping himself fit. Mo's out there like Rocky, training him in the rain, getting him to power on, to win his golden boots, to win his golden boot prediction. I can't wait to see that. Mo and Gareth out in the rain training together. But we're going to call it a day for our reaction podcast to the World Cup 2022 draw. The draw is done. It's completed. We now know the situation for Qatar. So all we've got to do is get preparing for the World Cup. Easy. Mo, Kaya, thanks so much for your time.
Pedri,
thank you.
That's going to be Mo's sign-off for any podcast, I think, between now and the end of the season. So if you're listening to the podcast regularly, just prepare yourself for that. Right, we're going to call it there for today's edition. As always, thanks so much for listening. If you hit subscribe, you can get access to a brand new episode as soon as it'll be ready. We'll be back next week, getting into the day job of the Premier League and the Champions League. Thanks for listening, and speak to you soon.